Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends? My name is Emily Lang. I'm an actress, writer, singer, codependent, returnee from rock bottom and a gratefully recovering addict. And this is the podcast where we aim to rid the shame, the highs and lows and deadly blows that ultimately led us to the lessons that we never knew we needed to learn but are so grateful that we did. So, global warming. What do you feel when you hear those two words put together? If you're anything like my guest today, you'll feel crippling anxiety and stress and upset. Unsurprising, like most people. But how do we find the balance of being informed, doing the right thing, being aware, but still taking care of our mental health? My guest, comedian Laura Lex, and I are discussing all this and more today. Okay, so it is 2016, and I've realized, and I've said this a lot, that every single time when I introduce these, I always go 2014, what a year, what a big year. 2016, honestly, I've got absolutely no idea what happened then. I think that was the year that like loads of celebrities died. So there's that to run in with. But at this point, we are in Gloucestershire in 2016, which is actually my hometown. That's where I was brought up. So if those fields could talk, they would not have much to say at all. But it's 2016, we are in Gloucestershire, and this is a conversation that is happening with a friend and my guest today, Laura Lex. Tell me what's going on.
So, hi, it was a really offhand conversation with a friend. I think we were talking about Brexit, and I was being doom and gloom, not being the biggest fan of Brexit in the world, as per. And I said something about Brexit being a worry. And my friend said, just to sort of cheer me up, he said, oh, don't worry about Brexit. Before the effects of that kick in, we'll all be dead from ocean acidification. And I didn't really think much of it at the time. I knew I was worried about climate change, climate crisis, and the impending climate doom has always played on my mind a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know what ocean acidification was. And ocean acidification got stuck in my head as a phrase. I didn't know what it meant, didn't know what it was. Pretty sure I should have been scared of it, but it got so stuck in my head and became the little like grain of sand that the pearl of my climate anxiety formed around. Mm-hmm. And I never quite came back from that offhand cheering up about Brexit.
I love this like backhand thing of going, oh my God, you know, I'm so worried about Trump. I'm so worried about what this is going to do to the world. I'm so worried about, you know, Republican America or whatever. And go,
yeah,
no, don't worry. Because like, because there's that volcano that's under Yellowstone, which is all going to go. It's totally fine. And yeah. You're like, no,
problem. Let's go back. Give me the first problem. I want to worry about Republican America all over again. What? I feel really, really stupid because there are so many things. I know, because of my ADHD, I know very, very strange facts about a lot of things, but I don't actually know the things that I'm supposed to know, like the important things, like what is ocean acidity?
I still don't know. I'm too scared to Google it. I don't want to know. I'm too scared to Google it, and I'm terrified that I don't know what it is. I'm scared it's going to kill me. And I won't know what it is even while it's killing me. I have no idea. That's my problem with the climate crisis a lot of the time, is it terrifies me to the point where I can't do anything else, but I also am so scared of it that I don't really want to talk about it either.
Yeah.
So even like when you said, oh, your moment, think about your moment for this, I was like, do I want to spend an hour talking about the climate crisis and how scared of it? Not really. But then if I don't talk about it, I'm just as bad as everybody else that's not talking about it. What do you do to shut your brain up?
Yeah, 100%. I completely understand. It's one of those things. It frightens me so much that I can't look at it a lot of the time.
I know
it's there. It's like, I don't know. It's like some weird, it's like It Follows. Do you remember that horror film, It Follows, with the person just walking behind you? I was like, that's what climate change is for me. I just have to keep going and this thing is following me.
And I think it's one of those things where I've adapted my life a lot to be as good as I can be as an individual on carbon.
Yeah.
But because you forget the adaptations that you've made in your life, then every now and again I sort of look at Greta Thunberg and think, I should be doing that. I should have given up everything to go and fight this as big as I can. And I'm too cowardly to do that. But I also then feel like I've done nothing. Like I might as well have been getting a private jet every 5 minutes. And, you know, I forget the things I have done because I didn't do all of it.
Yeah. I completely understand. I have a little journal notebook thing, like most of us do, in which I sort of like to write down little comments that I might think about during the day. And I remember one of them I came across, it really made me laugh. But I was like, just because you're following Greta Thunberg on Instagram does not mean you're making a difference.
You want that written on a piece of driftwood just in your downstairs toilet, you know? Like, that is inspirational quote material.
Just because you're following Greta Thunberg on Instagram does not mean you're making a difference. Because I was like, that's what I do, because I'm too afraid of it. I'm too scared to go so deep into it that I won't be able to think about anything else.
Yeah.
That I almost like go the opposite direction and do the things you're supposed to do, like recycle and, you know, not take private jets everywhere. I mean, before there's climate crisis, I was taking private jets. Left, right, and center.
I sold all four of mine when I really realized how big the crisis was, you know?
You are a saint.
I'm a hero. I texted Neymar and said, please don't fly in that 300-seater jet on your own. Please don't do it, buddy. I think that's where I ended up, though. It was part of it. It wasn't. I probably would have ended up down the rabbit hole anyway, but I spent 2 years completely paralysed by climate change fear, unable to do anything, because it was like, how do you go back to normal in sort of quotation marks life once you know about all this? But if you don't try and crack on, what do you do? And I was very aware I was sort of ruining my husband's life by being a miserable sort of puddle on the floor. And I just was like, I don't see a solution.
Yeah.
And it took years to like get enough therapy to go, right, the fear is about a real thing. Mm-hmm. But if you're so scared of a thing that you're paralyzed by it, then the fear is an unhelpful symptom. You can be scared of it and you can be proactive, but fear is meant to be a driving force, or can be used as, probably not meant to be, but you know, it's meant to make you run away or fix the problem. And if it's not doing that, then there's too much fear. You need to balance the fear so that you can go back to the thing causing the fear and help on that subject.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. Bang on. It is getting sort of fixated on something and really worried about it. Is that something that has been like a recurring theme through your life, or was it this, like, when this happened that really altered your anxiety in a way?
Yeah, I think, well, I've always had anxiety and depression, but I think before this, I always had more closer things to worry about. I was always so broke. Where was rent going to come from? Mm. Or, you know, that, or there was a more pressing personal issue. Mm. And then this really kicked in just after I'd got married. I'd gone full time as a comedian. Money was fine. I was happy in love. We wanted to start trying for a baby. All was good. And it was like there were no more personal things big enough to worry about. So find
let's
the biggest
go global
problem. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Take it global.
Your life's really good, kid. What can you find to worry about now? And I think that Ooh. Is a common anxiety thing. You know, we're built to worry because yeah. that's how we keep ourselves safe. But yeah, it really was just like, well, you're financially stable, you're in love, you're secure, you're safe, mm-hmm. your career's going all right. Pick something that you can't fix and worry yeah. about that.
Yeah, it's something that is so wildly out of your control.
Yeah.
That there is absolutely no way that you are going to be able to harness it by yeah. yourself. And it's almost that thing of when wanting to know everything, but then not wanting to know everything because mm-hmm. the knowing everything will paralyze you. That yeah. I often refer to these things as, I call it paranormal activity. Where it's like with anxiety or depression or, you know, intrusive thoughts, everything that you're thinking about, you're making these things up yourself. They're things like maybe based in fact, but everything is so much worse. And because it's off screen, you're going, I can't see it. It could be anything. Yeah. It could be anything. And so in your head, it's so much worse and going, what if this happened? Then what if this happened? Then what if this happened? And then it just takes over your life.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, fabulous. Here we are. Fantastic. I was doing great. And now the planet has fucked me.
Why did it have to happen just as I got out of my overdraft? God damn it.
I only had goddamn Brexit to worry about. Shit.
Yeah, that seems like easy compared to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I totally get it. I had it. It's my cat just making a big leap off the window. I had it the other day when I was on the tube escalator. You know, we've all been there. When you go down and looking at the posters, and I was looking at the posters, and I in my head, sort of without acknowledging it, went, "Oh, I'm fine. I'm all right. Everything's all okay. Going okay." And the minute that happened, it was like this switch went in my brain yeah. going, what is it that's going to happen that's going to fuck this up?
Yeah.
What is coming? What do I need to prepare myself for? Because this is too easy. Something's got to go wrong. Even though we spend so much of our lives just like searching for peace and like, you know, on that quest to be all right. The minute we are actually all right, you go, I need to look for the next problem.
Yeah,
I mean, you
which
went
is an
big
evolutionary
whammy.
Thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's what our safe. Brains do. Right, we've got food now. Now, how do we keep warm? Okay, we're warm and we've got food. Now, how do we have babies so that there's more of us? Okay, yeah. We've done that. Now, is that a shadow over there? Are they coming to steal the food and the warmth that we've got? Like, we've evolved to be like that so that we survive. But yeah. then it's when that becomes uncontrollable that you just think like, oh, I need like blinkers for my brain yeah. sometimes.
Yeah. If I learn anything from Game of Thrones, anything, it was to never assume safety ever and never start monologuing because the minute that happens.
Yeah. That's and always ask everybody if they're your brother before you let them finger you.
Always, always, always.
Check.
Just check. Before
quick DNA swab in the cheek.
Before you get someone's tongue up an arse.
Yeah. Are we related? I need to know.
What's that family tree thing that you could do when you like?
Yeah. 1, 2, 3 and me. Could you please spit in this bag? It's not an STI test, no. I need to know if my dad spread a seed somewhere I didn't know about. Could you just Thanks, babes. No, I do fancy you. It's just, do I fancy you because you're my brother? How can I know?
Because that is a confusing emotion and I just don't know. I don't know. And things have happened outside of Westeros.
Yeah.
So let's just be safe here.
And I've been looking for new things that are going to ruin my life. And I really think shagging my brother would be the thing that made escalator rides less comfortable from now on.
Me. That would be a doozy. So honestly, I can't be dealing with it. There's already fucking climate change. Oh, that's nice, isn't it? Oh, everybody, Mickey's joined the chat.
I saw a meme on Instagram, and I've seen it many times because it's been deliberately targeted towards me, I believe. But it says, self-care is sticking your face in a very soft cat.
And I think look at his little face watching out the window.
Such a
He's like, I just spent a weekend away from my dog with a different dog, and I love all animals, so I'm fine with that. And it was my parents' dog, it's a nice little dog, but then I got back to my dog, who is so rubbish. And it's just like, I'm so happy to be back with you. You're so smelly and small and little and scared of everything.
You're like a bit shit, and I love it.
Yeah, dog. She's the like runt of a litter of that was not meant to be born. It was an old dog that the people that owned it didn't think that there was any way she'd get pregnant, so hadn't really paid that much attention. And then suddenly, at 11 years old, she had these two puppies, and my dog was a smaller one. So we like bought her. We took her on. And she's had so many health problems, bless her. She's only three, and she was allergic to everything for her first year. She just had ear infections every other month. And then at 6 months old, she stopped using one of her legs and had to have surgery to have her hip joint replaced. And then at 18 months old, she got so savagely attacked by another dog that her lungs had to be like shrunk, like she had to have parts of her lungs removed. And she just bounced back from all of it. And she's just the most incredibly affectionate, amazing. Like, I'm up in the attic of my house recording this. She will be lying on the spare bed listening. And as soon as she hears me on the ladder, she'll come to the bottom of the ladder and wait for me. She's just the most gorgeously tiny, rubbish little dog. I love her.
It's just the best. Yeah. I love him. I love, like, he's such a dud cat. Like, he's like a proper dud cat. He's not as a cat should be. He's sort of nice. Like... He's sort of like a human and a dog got together and made a cat.
I love it. I love it.
And my best mate, who sort of treats him like, did you ever have, when you're little, when your parents' friend came around, your parents' friend who didn't have kids and would be like a bit too rough with you, like chuck you around. My best mate likes to sort of pick Mickey up and swing him and be like, he bloody loves it, look at him. He's fucking terrified.
Yeah.
You can see the panic. Now,
when the arsehole goes inverse, that's not a good thing. It's not supposed to look like a pencil sharpener.
We don't often take a portion of the podcast to talk about pets, but I think it is a really lovely thing because the amount of relief that animals have brought in times of need is quite astounding. What kind of dog is yours?
She's a Jack Russell. I'll find you a photo. She's usually my screensaver, but I was starting to feel guilty about how much she was my screensaver and not my daughter, so I changed it. She's got a really long snoot. There she is. She's got a funny little long face.
She's got a little
Harlequin
snoot.
Eyes. She has. She looks like, I don't know if you've ever seen the film Frankenweenie, but a dog that's just been stitched up from parts of other dogs. That's exactly what she looks like.
Like something out of Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah. She's brilliant. I love it.
I love it. It's animals that are just like a bit weird and a bit wrong. I just think the most fantastic people. They're amazing. Yeah.
My dad's got a Jack Russell too, and it's a little puppy, and his gums, well, his teeth are just a bit too big for his face, so his lips always get stuck up on his gums, so he gets his little tooth like goofing out, and it's the cutest little thing, and you're like, you just want to wet his teeth for him to let it fall down, but he's just sitting there like, he's quite a handsome little dog, but his teeth are always sticking out like, hello,
I love it. Or when they get one stuck up there and you're like, yes. You look so stupid. And you don't give a fuck.
No, you don't even know. You'd see your reflection and assume it was some other dude. I love you.
If you're up for it, would you talk more about how anxiety and depression has affected your life in the past? Is that something you're comfortable talking about?
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm in a good spot at the moment, but I'm also in a confusing spot at the moment because I had like a huge breakdown over the when climate crisis really was the focal point.
Yeah,
and managed to sort of come back from that through a lot of therapy and being on antidepressants and sort of got myself back to a much more stable place. And then concurrently with that and tied in, and part of it was that I really wanted to have kids and we couldn't conceive and then didn't want to conceive because I was so worried about the climate crisis and just everything was messy and mad. Yeah. And so I had sort of like 7 years of trying to start a family and failing. And that was difficult. And now I'm in a strange position where I finally have a daughter
and I love her to bits and she's amazing, but it didn't solve all my problems. It didn't cure the depression and anxiety overnight. And you're like, are you kidding me? My brain promised me that if I only had children, I would never be sad about anything ever again. And then you get exactly what you wanted. And then you hate yourself because you're just looking at yourself going, well, will I ever be happy? The problem is me. The problem is not all these problems that I think are problems. The problem is me. This is exhausting. I'm the one thing that I can never get rid of.
Yeah. I thought that this was going to be it. I thought when this happened, I was going to be fine.
Yeah.
I thought like the second that I got this job or I reached this weight and it's always the case and you can apply it to literally any part of your life. And it happens over and over and over again because we're always looking for the thing that's going to sort it. But the irony being that even if we did get the thing that sorted it, we'd then be like, as we said before, then be on high alert.
You'd be on the escalator.
What's going to go wrong? What's going to screw this up?
This year, I'm really sure that if I do treat myself to the Fortnum & Mason advent calendar, that's going to be the thing that solves it. It wasn't finally having children after three quarters of a decade. It's going to be that advent calendar that solves it all, I think.
But I think that's fair and I think that's probably right.
Yeah. If it doesn't, I've got a really nice advent calendar.
It's just a win-win situation. It's fine, but I would say that is probably the secret to long-lasting happiness.
Yeah.
Like, people can say it's inner peace and, you know, acceptance and surrender. It's not.
No. It's always having the money to buy yourself the next thing you think is going to solve it. That is genuine. Honestly, I know this sounds shallow, but having enough money that the basics aren't a worry was the biggest salve to my mental health I've ever experienced in my life. And I hate all this, like, money can't buy you happiness bullshit. Mm. Yes, it fucking can. Or it can at least push away the most severe of your terrors. Because there is nothing more terrifying than wondering where your rent or your money or any of that is going to come from. It's awful. And it's not that you're perfectly happy once all that's gone. But, oh my God, it is a world of difference when you are just comfortable enough that you know you're not going to stop existing because of your lack of money.
Yeah.
It's mad.
It's crippling. It is crippling. And it's something that so many of us, I've been there. I remember coming back from an audition a few years ago and not having enough money to get on the tube on my Oyster card and having to ask a stranger for £1 for help. Yeah.
It's awful.
It's really frightening. It's really, really frightening. And in that moment, and when it's happening, you think it will never change. And you think, and like, it's your constant, and it's your constant, constant worry. I don't know how I'm going to be. I don't know what sacrifices I need to make to be able to continue my life.
The difference that moving towards a universal basic income or like a benefit system that actually functioned would make to so much mental health across the country and how it would boost productivity and people's ability to be their best selves. It's just
because living in that kind of fear,
hypervigilance,
it's exhausting, and people aren't able to attend to so much more because of this fear.
Absolutely.
That surrounds them. We could go on about this for
a very long time. But like, it is really something that contributes to so much pain and fear and anxiety. And we sort of look at it as quite a dirty thing. As
to be poor. Like,
no, money being a dirty thing.
Oh, yeah.
Being like, oh God, like, oh no, yeah, exactly. Money won't buy you happiness. It's going like, no, but it, like, might keep you safe.
You don't all need to be millionaires, but you do need to be able to function.
I mean, guys, Laura sold her private jet, so.
I'm not even renting one of them out. God. But yeah, I think anxiety and depression is, career-wise, it's tricky because I started to talk about it and I think I made a mistake with my career in I talked about my depression and anxiety and struggles to start a family way earlier than I should have done. I wasn't ready. And then there's also that difficulty that I did it way too soon and it was good and it was, I'll never regret that show because I'm really proud of the show. But then I didn't want to talk about it for a while. I just went, I cannot keep like discussing it constantly. I'm not well enough to chat about this all the time. And then I think my career floundered a little bit because this industry likes you to be the spokesperson for one thing.
Yeah.
It wants to know who you are, you know, like, are you the eccentric one-liner guy? Are you the girl that talks about feminism? Are you this person? Are you the politics one? Are you that one? And if you don't want to be one single thing, the industry doesn't know what to do with you. And I think the fact that I sort of dabbled in that and then didn't want to all the time, but still did a little bit and actually just wanted to be fun and entertaining for a little while, that messed, I think, a bit with the trajectory that I was on.
Yeah. I think, I can't remember who I was discussing with this recently, the idea that when you enter into something, especially I think in comedy or maybe one person shows, things like that, that you enter into an identity and like you said, then that becomes your thing. Mm. And then you are sort of, especially if you're successful in that area, you're then sort of expected to be the voice of everyone and represent everyone.
Yeah.
And the amount of pressure that comes with, especially if you don't, have all the answers and if it's not something that you've asked to take on, you're just like, well, I don't know. And then if you want to step outside of that, then you're kind of punished for it. Or it's people don't really know who you are or don't know where to place you. And it's really confusing. And then you sort of find yourself being jammed into an identity that you never really chose and going, I guess this will do.
Yeah. And it's exhausting, I think, a lot of the time. And like, how can you be the voice of mental health awareness or whatnot? Because there's so many experiences of mental health difficulties or crises that you don't have. Like, I'm so aware that my experience of anxiety and depression is a really privileged one, of having a support network around me that scraped me up, of like the rock bottom of my life would be moving back in with my parents or a sibling. That's not a rock bottom that a lot of people have. That's an incredibly high off the ground rock bottom, you know? So, and I had this breakdown as a verbose person that's really good with their words, that could talk to people and have communication with people and had the wherewithal to get to into the NHS system and get therapy and you know, be on antidepressants. I've got antidepressants have been taken in my family before, so even going on those, while it really knocked me sideways to do that, it wasn't like this earth-shaking thing. So I had one of the most privileged experience of mental health, so I can't be the voice of all mental health.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince.
Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I always say as well with this stuff is that everyone's experience is so vastly different that it doesn't, you can look at Wikipedia and there can be checkboxes and like we can recognize stuff within ourselves.
Yeah.
But someone else's experience will never be yours. And your experience will never be somebody else's. And so it's why I'm always really passionate about people not projecting their experience onto somebody else and going, if you're not doing this, then you're not doing enough, you're not doing it right. If you're not meditating for 20 minutes a day, then you're not trying hard enough. And it's like, I have such chronic CPTSD and ADHD that it's almost physically impossible for me. Like I would love it. I would really, really, I've heard it's brilliant, but I can't. And then the shame of going, oh, I'm not trying hard enough because that doesn't work for me. And it's being able to find your own journey through it and being able to find points that you relate to and points that you don't, and being okay with going, oh, that doesn't work for me. And everyone else being okay with that.
Yeah.
Going, or someone going, well, it worked for me, so why doesn't it work for you?
I think for me, a big part of what I wanted to represent or just say, hey, this was me, if it's you, I just want to put it out there that you're not alone, was saying...
Exactly.
I was broken and looking for a way out, but... had a shower every day, went to work every day, paid my rent, wasn't addicted to anything. I wasn't a destructive rock bottom person. Mm. And I wanted to say to people, if this is you, if you're looking at your life and going, well, I can't be that bad because I haven't trashed the place or smashed my laptop into a wall or walked out on my life or had an affair or like turned to drink or drugs or any of that stuff. If you're just quietly functioning in oblivion, that is a version of this as I understand it. And I just kind of wanted to put that out there and go, well, there are some high functioning depressives among us.
Oh,
and
my God.
It's just as valid because I didn't think I was valid enough to be considered ill because I wasn't doing all those symptom things. And I didn't get it that the fact that I was like quietly going, oh, it wouldn't be the worst thing if I drove my car into the central reservation. At least I could like not be running my life for a few weeks. Like, but then I'd rationalize with myself and go, oh, but there's really no reason you should feel like that. Like you're not as bad as other people. So you're not like top of the triage list. So stop complaining. I wanted to kind of go, it's okay if that's you. Please get help.
100%. And I think it is so important to talk about. And it's not something we often discuss because when we talk about rock bottoms or we talk about mental health, and this is why I really love doing this podcast, because of finding the happy medium of it not being this like polarized response of going, it's either like deadly, deadly serious, or it's a choice and it's not real. It's finding this happy medium of going, we can talk about these things, we can just spread them all out and actually have a laugh about some of it, because some of it is very, very silly and actually very funny in hindsight, not all of it. But it's going, you know, everyone's rock bottom, as it were, looks very different.
Yeah.
And just because you experienced it in this way does not take away from your pain and what happened to you, because that's you. It belongs to you, and you don't need to go, oh, I don't deserve to hurt because mine wasn't as bad as that, because everyone's experience is relative. And it's the thing of going, someone who is a high functioning, it's a high functioning depressive, but doing okay. And then, you know, someone telling them and going, oh, God, your life is fine. Imagine if you were that. It's like going to someone who's really cold, going, oh, just imagine being hot.
Yeah.
And trying to like shove yourself into that experience. It just doesn't work. And I think the thing of not getting help because you don't think that you're bad enough, you don't think that you deserve it, is something really, it's really important we attend to that, because this is, it's a progressive illness. Depression and any kind of personality disorders or trauma disorders, they get worse if they're not treated. And so it's going, the people, I admire anybody who actually steps out of the race before they get to that deadly finish line. Because if things are going okay, it's the same with people who are maybe struggling with alcohol. We don't all need to get to the place of like your life being entirely destroyed to go into recovery. If you manage to look around and go, things aren't happening the way I want to, but actually it's still okay. But seeing the path ahead and seeing where it's going to go to, but stepping out early, I think is the most incredible thing. We don't have it's a very long-winded way of saying we don't need to wait until you're dying to get help.
Absolutely.
To ask for help.
Yeah.
I've discussed this on the podcast the other day. When I was at school, I was at an all girls boarding school.
I'm so sorry. But,
I know. I'm so sorry. As Kat Sim said, it was like the fucking Hunger Games. It was absolutely nuts. But I had a really bad eating disorder between the ages of about 16 and 25. And I was really, really in it. But when I was 16, 17, I had anorexia, lost a lot of weight. And the school nurse came to like get me to weigh, because they'd noticed I'd lost weight. And she put me on the scales and went, and you can get off and you're fine. And because I was still in the parameters of a healthy weight.
Yeah.
So it wasn't going, we're actually attending to the problem that you've lost a lot of weight and that is worrying. Yeah. It's going, oh no, you're still healthy. We'll wait till you're really unhealthy and then we'll do it.
Yeah.
And that's why this shit is so bad, is because people compare and despair and go, I'm not that bad, so therefore I don't need it yet.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very, very long-winded way of saying well done, essentially.
Thank you.
Because it takes a lot to understand that you need help when things are going okay.
Yeah, because I think your brain is so malleable to the boundaries of what's acceptable can shift so imperceptibly in your mind, and what's normal and right can become so far removed. I've had disordered eating. I wouldn't particularly class myself as having had, but I had very similar time frames from about 15 to 25 bouts of disordered eating where I would like lose tons of weight. And I remember at one point being at uni, which I'd fought to go to uni, and I was really so proud to be there, trying to write an essay, and I hadn't eaten solid food for 4 days, and my hands were so cold, I couldn't type, and I couldn't think straight, and I couldn't write this essay that I was so excited to write.
Yeah.
But the thought of just putting some baked beans in my mouth felt like I would be losing. And now I can't understand how that made such logical sense to me.
Yeah.
But at the time, that was stone cold logic that I would have given up and failed and lost and undone all this hard work that I'd done.
Yeah.
But you don't see the sand shifting in your own brain when you're sneaking down that path of illness on a subject like that. You don't see the terrain changing. You're just suddenly lost.
Yeah, you're completely. That is such a good way of putting it. Of you don't see the terrain. Oh, I love that. You don't see the terrain changing, but you are suddenly lost. Because that is exactly it. Because the changes are almost imperceptible.
Mm.
It's like if we looked at a time lapse of it, you'd see it happen really quickly.
Yeah.
But in the time the things happen so slowly, the changes happen so slowly, the ideas and the thoughts that drop in happen like just like bit by bit.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's just dripping.
Yeah.
Like a little sand timer. And then suddenly that's your way of living. And you don't know how you got there.
No.
You have no idea how you got there. And because it's happened so gradually, it's it's really difficult to see it as a problem or see it as something that isn't working for you because it's your way of living. It's your way of being, and having to reprogram yourself when you have believed in absolute, when you've been so within that terrain and made a life for yourself out in the wilderness. It's difficult to, it's really difficult to unpick that and go, oh, yeah. I should probably head back towards civilization.
Because you've got no home in civilization. When you've pitched a tent and made the wilderness, you're the wilderness guy.
Yeah.
If you give up on being the wilderness guy, you don't know who you are. That was how I felt. Like, well, if I'm not doing this, I've got to go and think about other things, where it's easier if my entire waking day is focusing on whether or not I'm going to have a putty for loo this evening and be delighted.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you've lost yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's exactly it. It's it's such a good way of putting it. I love it. Because like living out in that thing of being like, I am the Bear Grylls of this shit. Mm-hmm. I am so good at this. And then going, I don't know if I'm actually good at anything else.
Yeah.
And if I'm not sort of thin and controlling my weight, and this very much applies to this, as we're talking, it's applying to us and disordered eating, but it can be applied to anything else. Mm-hmm. You're going, if I'm not doing this, if with fitness, for example, or gaming or gambling, any of those things, when you become, and you become really good at it.
Hugely. The pandemic for me was a big help in, and I'm so apologetic to anybody that finds that really a crass thing to say, but it in all the ways it was a downside was enormous, including the loss of life, obviously. But one tiny thing that it did to help me was showed me how obsessive I was about my job. And I was working constantly and was terrified of the steam train slowing down or stopping or being derailed or whatever. And then the pandemic threw it all off the rails and I was fine and happy and continued. And I would never have slowed down my work pace had it not been for that forced stoppage. But when I was forced to stop and I had to and everything was fine, it was like, oh, wow, what?
Yeah.
I think it can happen with anything, even healthy things. You can become so obsessed with them you do a healthy thing to an unhealthy level.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think that's why something like fitness is often really confusing and people who are fitness addicts or exercise addicts, because people go like, oh, brilliant, good for you. And you're like, no, this is really bad. This is wrecking my knees or whatever. Yeah. And things that are shrouded in something positive.
Yeah.
It's difficult. Something like work as well. We often talk about the pandemic and sort of the effects it had, because obviously, like we said, that the loss of life, the what it did, I think, to young people, people at school, people at the university, absolutely. And we will be managing that for a very long time, I believe. But especially for people, for creatives, the forced hiatus was such, and this is going to sound, it's going to sound very strange, but it was a real relief, because being an actor, so much of your identity relies on whether you're working, whether you've got auditions, whether someone else thinks that you're good enough and that you are special and worthy of this work, and putting all of your self-worth onto that, and that just being your thought process day in, day out, is really exhausting. And again, it happens over time and you don't realize it, and then suddenly it's everything. Michael, Mickey is attempting to bite my hand off. And suddenly when it got to the point when no one was working and you weren't allowed to work and everything stopped, it was almost like oh my God, I can breathe. I can breathe. I don't need to worry so much about this anymore. Mm.
It's hard though. I think it's another thing when you are prone to anxiety. It's horrifying to yourself to admit to the privilege of a terrible thing, you having been privileged enough that a terrible thing had upsides to you. Like you feel guilty. And maybe we should feel guilty. I'm glad that I'm empathetic enough to feel guilty, but but I think there has to be space in adult conversation to admit the sides of it that are icky and going, I'm sorry, I was fortunate enough that there were upsides. Like, it doesn't feel great, but it's the truth.
It's not as clear cut and black and white as I think it would be quite useful to be.
Yes.
Because it's a sort of, if it was just like overwhelmingly a really good thing or overwhelmingly a really bad thing, it would be almost, I don't want to say easier to discuss, but it would, there'd be so much less grey area and much less guilt and shame surrounding the emotions we have about it. So we talked a lot about lots of things, climate change, depression, anxiety, and animals. But what I want to know is what are the things about you that you genuinely love and cherish as a person? Do you?
Oh no.
I know. Hates it.
Oh, I hate this question. Oh no. I hate it a million. What do I love about myself? I love the people I attract.
That's good.
I cannot look at my life or my career as anything other than having amassed some people that I truly think are beautiful. And if I'm going to be up my ass for a minute, that has to be something to do with who I am, or at least the people I like. I had a really lovely experience this weekend. I do a podcast with my brother that's really, it's very niche. It's very small. My younger brother, who's not a comedian, is teaching me GCSE science. And basically we just scream at each other for a week, for an hour every week. And we did our first live show this weekend and we have a tiny following. It's tiny, right? And I don't know how to make it bigger, but we did our first live show and we were at the London Podcast Festival. And I think we had probably one of the smallest audiences of anybody at that festival. But our fans came dressed up like you've never seen. There was a point where I was coming down some escalators and I was looking in the foyer and there were all the people pouring out of all these different rooms. But our fans were all there with little rat ears on because they're called the lab rats, and lab coats, and dressed as different things that have come up from the podcast. And I just thought, yeah, I'm not one of those people that like plays stadiums and has thousands and millions of people queuing up for tickets on pre-release. But the people that do love it, fucking love it. And they are golden-hearted people. And I'm kind of okay with that. Okay with that.
That's genuinely one of the most wonderful things I've heard in a while. I just think that's fantastic because I just I'm gonna roll it out because we've all heard it, but it is quality, not quantity.
Yeah.
And that is such a perfect example of it.
Cool.
Even if it's not thousands of people, but the few that have been affected in joy and with joy, like literal joy.
Yeah.
You're coming dressed up as a literal lab rat.
And they all went for dinner before the show. Like they all met up, chatted and met up and went for dinner and then came to the show and then went for drinks afterwards. And they've all become friends through it. And I was just like, that's great. I'm so proud of that.
Also that I need to listen to this because that sounds like such a fucking good concept for a podcast. It's unreal.
It is just two people screaming at each other. Like occasionally somebody says atoms or enzymes and somebody like, but it's mainly us just falling out for an hour.
It's amazing. It's like my mum tried because I've got really bad dyscalculia, I'm dyslexic in maths, and my mum tried to teach me maths. And I remember my brother used to call her the raptor because she'd just go scream.
Yeah.
But that's so brilliant. We've all got a portion of the podcast that we like to call thank you letters, where we ask you to express gratitude for a person, a place, or a thing, or one of all three, but just something, somewhere, someone that you would like to say thank you to in this moment.
oh, my husband, Tom, for being the world's most patient man who has loves me and allows me to be me without pushing it.
Yeah.
And has never, ever for one moment made me feel bad about behaviours that other people could have made me feel bad for.
Yeah.
He's a really cool guy. I love him.
Oh, my little heart. Oh, oh, I love it. Is there anything that we can talk about as well that you'd like to promote while you're here? Or do we need to be very chic and say we can't talk about it?
Oh, I wish there were projects we couldn't talk about. Oh, that'd be great. If I'm like, oh, I'm filming something right now that we can't talk about. It's too cool. No, I can talk about everything. Hey, you can buy my books. I've written two books. One is my diary of coping with anxiety via pretending you're married to Jürgen Klopp. And the other one is a novel about a woman whose life falls apart. And so she plays netball to try and fix it. The world's worst game.
Amazing.
The podcast sounds good. The podcast is called Lex Education. Give that a listen. And my live shows are a bit sporadic because I'm kind of on maternity leave at the moment. But I will be at the Leicester Festival next year doing a solo show. And I try and like keep stuff on Instagram going. So follow me on Instagram for details. Oh,
amazing. I will link all of this below. But I want to say thank you so, so much for coming on today and dealing with all of our technical issues. Because as I like to say, producer Felipe is not in the room today. He's in a separate room. And when producer Felipe is not here, my life falls apart. So thank you so much for being so patient with us and being so brilliant and so open. We really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.